Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
And welcome to Africa Link. My name is Mark Caldwell. Coming up, Saturday is World AIDS Day. So how much headway is being made in the fight against the lethal disease? We talk to the United Nations body, UNAIDS.
There is better use of condoms. There are people clearly having less partners. But, you know, we would still like to see more people being tested at an early stage so that they're aware of their status.
We also hear why motorists in South Africa are threatening the authorities with acts of civil disobedience.
Say that we don't want nothing with a trolley anymore.
Those stories on this edition of Africa Link, brought to you by Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Saturday is World AIDS Day, and the United Nations says the number of new infections with HIV is continuing to fall. In sub-Saharan Africa, they dropped by a quarter in the decade from 2001 to 2011. Yet despite the huge success of antiretroviral drugs in cutting the rate of HIV transmission from pregnant women to their unborn babies and in helping to prolong the lives of HIV sufferers, the disease still claims 1.7 million lives a year across the globe. 79% of all people who have HIV live in sub-Saharan Africa. But there is a vision of an AIDS-free generation in which almost no child is born with HIV and those who do contract the virus get swift access to medical treatment. Via Skype, I asked Tim Martineau, Chief of Staff, Executive Office at the UNAIDS in Geneva, how close Africa was to making that vision reality.
We believe there's a very great potential and opportunity for the world and for sub-Saharan Africa to achieve the high-level meeting targets that were agreed by member states in 2010, to really achieve the targets by 2015. And in that sense, we believe it is achievable to have a world without AIDS, and certainly a response that is more effectively managed with people receiving quality treatment and care.
In what areas and in which African countries has substantial progress been made in the fight against AIDS over the last 12 months?
To start with, I think there's been fantastic progress everywhere. What's strongest is the response in a number of the East and Southern African countries where the epidemic is perhaps at its greatest. So Malawi has seen a 72% change incidence, Zambia similarly 58%, Namibia 68%, Ethiopia has seen a 90% decline. So South Africa, the country with the biggest epidemic in the world, has seen a decline of 41%, and I think a rapidly expanding response with the new commitment and invigorated response in that country.
A child born today in sub-Saharan Africa with HIV, what are the chances of that child surviving into adulthood?
The issue in sub-Saharan Africa is that there are still a substantial number of children born every year with HIV, but there's still more than 300,000 children born globally with HIV. 14 countries have seen declines and real progress. Coverage of services have now reached 59%.
How much of a problem is funding as donor countries grapple with their own financial and economic issues?
We've been concerned, obviously, about the economic environment and its impact upon global commitments to HIV. And there was an initial dip 2 years ago, but I'm very pleased to see that there is at least a sustained response from donors to the AIDS response. And we're keeping a very close eye on that.
What about funding irregularities, misuse of funds? How big an issue is this in Africa?
That's always a challenge. I wouldn't want to just call it an Africa problem. I think it's a global problem. The resources, we obviously need to manage them as effectively and as carefully as possible. There are issues of capacity. There's also issues of accountability. And one of the key things that we think are very important is an effective accountability mechanism, governance structure, call it as you wish, that involves a broad participation and stakeholders to monitor and the response and the effective use of resources.
Do people generally know more about the disease than they did 5 or 10 years ago, or are there still a lot of people who think it just doesn't concern them?
There is better use of condoms. There are people clearly having less partners. But we would still like to see more people being tested at an early stage so that they're aware of their status and can access treatment. So generally an overall improvement, but still lots of room for improvement.
Tim Martineau from UNAIDS in Geneva. Unprotected sex is not the only way HIV can be transmitted. It can also be spread by drug users sharing dirty needles and syringes. Now, it occurred to policymakers some time ago that giving away brand new clean needles and syringes to intravenous drug users would be a smart investment in public health on financial grounds alone, because the cost of HIV treatment far exceeds the price of simple medical utensils. Kenya is now pursuing this policy, as almost 80% of drug users in its coastal region are carrying the HIV virus. But is the scheme living up to expectations? From Mombasa, Eric Ponder reports.
In one of the caves along the shores of the coastal town of Mombasa, drug addict Billy Bilali is preparing a second jab from a syringe dosed with heroin. Next to him is his friend Ali Masudi, lies on a hard rock, almost half naked after several jabs of the hard drug using the same needle.
I'm addicted to it, so I have to take it 3 times a day. Because as you can see now, life is so difficult. So when you have it to inject yourself, it gives you more allowance to stay a long time. Because this, I think, it's go direct to your blood and then it stays longer before you get another dose. Sometimes you can be like 10 people and maybe injection only 3 of them. So just go merry-go-round. We say merry-go-round. After finish that one, you give it to your friend.
This is just a tip of the iceberg of what goes on in the back street and caves of major towns in the Kenyan coastal region. It is home to the majority of injecting drug abusers who share syringes and needles. According to a recent report by the World Bank on Population and AIDS, Kenya has recorded a significant drop in HIV and AIDS prevalence. It currently stands at position 11 in the whole world, with 4.8% of the population between 15 and 49 affected, down from 6.3% in 2009-2010. However, new HIV and AIDS infection among injecting drug users are on the increase, with as many as 25% reportedly sharing needles. This year, the government of Kenya started distributing free syringes and needles to more than 50,000 injecting drug users across the country, following growing concern over the spread of HIV and other blood-borne illness through drug users sharing syringes. Abdullah Ahmed Badrous is a program manager of MEWA, a Muslim rehabilitation center in Mombasa. Here, he explains more about the program.
We need also to educate the community to understand about why is it important for drug users to be given these clean syringes. The biggest problem is those who are leading in advocating for the syringe program is the Ministry of Health. Now the problem is that some politicians, because now they know that some of the Kenyans, they are against it. So they are taking that advantage by saying no.
Under the program, the government aims to distribute over 8 million needles and syringes to drug users and set up rehabilitation centers where drug abusers will get the much-needed needles and syringes at no cost, besides being encouraged to undergo HIV testing. But 6 months down the line, statistics show that only 2,900 out of the 26,000 drug users have been rehabilitated in Mombasa since the program was started early this year. Drug addict Billy Bilali told me why many shy away from the national program.
This system, they're just talking like normal politics. They don't reach really where people they need the injection. They started this program, but they cannot give you every time because they're not there every day to give the people. They just give today and then they lost for some few days.
The government's move has also drawn criticism from resident and civil society groups who say it goes against their efforts to end the injecting drug use. Regina Mavusu is a prevention officer with a Blue Cross, a community-based organization that works to fight drug abuse.
It will really help to reduce the infection of HIV/AIDS and hepatitis. Addicts, they don't take proper hygiene. They don't clean their syringes well. So you find that for them to get infection, it's very easy. So we'll find that at the end of the day, we supply the syringes, but they will be vulnerable to getting infections.
As Kenya joins other nations marking Saturday's World AIDS Day, one thing is for certain. The fight against the virus in this part of the country is far from being won.
Eric Ponder in Mombasa.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
A planned battlefield withdrawal by rebels in eastern Congo under a deal brokered by regional governments ran into difficulties on Friday, which included a dispute over abandoned army supplies that the insurgents want to take with them. Leaders of the Tutsi-led M23 rebel movement had agreed to pull out of the city of Goma by Saturday, but it now seems their departure will be delayed. There are also serious humanitarian concerns, with one senior UN official saying 130,000 people had been displaced in and around Goma. Thomas Glass is a spokesman for the International Committee of the Red Cross, and he is in Goma. I asked him how he would describe the humanitarian situation there.
A lot of people who have been displaced, a lot of them were already displaced to begin with and were living in precarious conditions in some of the camps outside of Goma, and they had to once again be displaced, leaving behind their belongings. And it has left them in situations where they were lacking the basic necessities. There's also been a lack of water in the city, and we have worked with the local authorities, the water board, in order to provide drinkable water to those in need.
Are you able to get the supplies you need to help people on the ground?
We're working very hard at it. We have a surgical team, which right now is in place, who has been performing over 40 surgical operations on conflict-related wounds and victims. And we have a second team that is coming in to provide support. We've been able to water trucking activities by bringing water to certain sites. For example, at a center where 20,000 people had sought refuge from the fighting. So we've been bringing drinkable water daily to these places. We've also been working inside a hospital and trying to build up the staff there in order to provide care for the wounded people.
Do you get the impression that both the rebels and government forces appreciate that humanitarian relief aid is needed and is necessary?
Well, we have a dialogue with all the different parties to the conflict, and they understand that we are a neutral and impartial humanitarian organization, and our work are exclusively humanitarian, and we work very hard in order for them to understand it, accept it, so that we can access and provide it to the victims of the conflict.
Are you getting all the access you need?
Well, right now we've been concentrating a lot of our work inside the city of Goma. Now that the front lines have shifted outside of the city, we're trying to improve our access to outside of the city in certain regions, such as Masisi or Rutshuru, where there are some people who are in desperate need for help.
What have people been telling you about life in Goma under rebel occupation?
Well, it's been a traumatic experience for the people here. And there's a lot of uncertainties in the air. We don't know what is going on, what is going to happen. And people are genuinely worried. They don't know what is going to happen, if the rebel forces are going to stay, what is going to happen next. So they're really living day by day in this uncertainty, which makes life very difficult.
Thomas Glass, spokesman for the International Committee of the Red Cross in Goma.
Human rights.
If at 18 you are old enough for armed combat, then surely you are also old enough to vote in an election. Human rights groups think you ought to be, but in Cameroon, the government disagrees. And so the National Commission on Human Rights and Freedoms in the Central African country has issued a report calling for change. The commission wants the minimum voting age, which currently stands at 21, to be lowered so that young people can participate fully in Cameroon's political life as a basic human right. From Yaounde, Moke Edwin Kinseka reports.
According to the report submitted to the office of President Paul Biya, violations of human rights are still rampant in Cameroon. One of the main issues highlighted is the right to vote. The report states that while 17-year-olds can be recruited into the army or gain admission to universities, they are denied the right to make political choices until they turn 21. The chairperson of the Human Rights Commission, Dr. Chemuta Banda, said this was an attempt to exclude young people who constitute the majority of Cameroon's population.
There's a question of freedom of conscience, freedom of the press. The issues are too many. That limiting the voting age to 20 was not a proper thing to do, because our young people in this country, we know that at the age of 17, they take up arms. They are in the army or they are in the universities. If you consider people in the university, people fighting to defend their forces, that they are not right to vote. And when you are doing that in a minority, we try to advise in the general interest that we should adopt best practical methods of doing things.
Young Cameroonians have generally reacted favorably to the report. I spoke to some first-year students at the University of Yaounde who insisted that they were mature enough to participate in the development of their country.
I can't imagine they keep on insisting that you are supposed to take part in the election at the age of 21. Then I don't see any reason why the maturity age should be 18.
I think it is a good idea because the majority of Cameroonians fall within that age group and it's going to make them participate in decision-making development of their country.
Most of us from 17 have an ID card, so you have the right to vote.
According to Cameroonian law, people become criminally liable at the age of 18, so denying them the right to vote sounds discriminatory. I asked legal expert Ashu Nyente about the political implications of lowering the voting age.
The political implications with that, those are those who have problems of unemployment and those who don't have access to health facilities. The fear is that this segment of the population is generally opposed to their political leaders.
This is the first time that the commission, whose mandate is to monitor human rights practices, has come up with a report that criticizes the very government that created it. Chemuta Banda told me that his institution is respecting the laws of Cameroon.
The law requires us to produce 2 annual reports in addition to the semester reports that we prepare. We do prepare semester reports that we send to the head of state, send to the president of the National Assembly, and send to the ministers in charge of justice on the situation of human rights in the country, and then to write recommendations so that we can try to improve upon our record of human rights.
It is not yet clear what the government of Cameroon will do with the report. The Speaker of Cameroon's National Assembly, Kavai Yege Jibril, and officials of the Ministry of Justice refused to comment, with the Speaker simply saying that he had taken note.
Moki Edwin Kinseka reporting. Next to South Africa, where thousands of motorists in Pretoria and Johannesburg have taken to the streets in protest at the government's proposed electronic tolling system, or e-toll, under which road tolls are paid by motorists automatically and without cash changing hands. But South African motorists believe that such tolls are not the answer, and the government should find other ways of funding the upkeep of roads. Some drivers are even threatening to destroy toll booths and equipment if the system really goes into operation. From Johannesburg, Tuzo Komolo reports.
South Africa's two major cities, Johannesburg and Pretoria, came close to a standstill on Friday as thousands of motorists marched to protest against the government's proposed e-tolling system.
Stop! Stop! All the girls are okay. Down with the e-tolls! Down! Down with the e-tolls! Down!
A few years ago, the government embarked on a highway improvement project starting with the country's richest province of Gauteng. Despite heavy opposition from labor movements, opposition parties, companies and ordinary motorists, e-toll booths and equipment were installed in all the province's highways to automatically bill motorists for every kilometer traveled on the country's highways. The government says the e-tolling system will go into operation early next year. However, protesting motorists led by the country's biggest trade union organization, the Congress of South African Trade Unions, COSATU, say that will never happen. COSATU Secretary General Zwelinzi Mavavi says the e-tolls will force the poor working class motorists off the highways.
These highways, all of us, together with them, we found them, yeah. They are called the freeways. So the freeway means we will drive there freely.
Vavi urges the black majority government to abandon the e-tolling system or face the wrath of the masses.
Don't be arrogant when you have power. We have borrowed you. We will take that power and then you will become ordinary people, just as we are here today.
Motorist Sydney Lomo agrees.
That we say, hell, go away, Charlie, go away, we don't want you anymore.
Say that.
We don't want nothing with Charlie anymore.
COSATU's communications officer Norman Mampane says the tolls will add to the burden of the poor. He describes them as a form of privatization meant to reserve the country's roads for South Africa's rich and famous.
The e-tolling system will continue to add burden on the triple crisis that we've already alluded around poverty, inequality and unemployment. Obviously, the rich will be able to go pass through the freeway because they can pay. And all the poor and workers will be forced to the so-called alternative route.
President Zuma's government has spent close to $2 billion installing e-tolling equipment and now insists that every motorist using the highways should pay the tolls. It has already issued a strong warning to those threatening to blockade the highways and destroy toll booths. However, Monges Mnyani, head of department for the Department of Housing in the Gauteng province, who accepted the protesters' memorandum on behalf of the government, promised that their grievances would be considered.
I have received a memorandum on behalf of the MSC and the entire Gauteng provincial government. We have heard your concerns, and I must say that we have already engaged on this matter. We'll be working together on the ground to solve the problem.
Motorists from both cities have agreed to block all the country's highways on the 6th of December to give the government a taste of what will happen if it goes ahead with e-tolling.
Tuzo Kumalo reporting from Johannesburg.
USA.
And in your say, we return to developments in the DRC. We recently asked you whether you thought the conflict in that region could be resolved.
It can't,
says Ronald Nablo, a regular listener from Canada.
The Democratic Republic of Congo is so weak as to hardly exist as a state at all. North and South Kivu provinces have drifted into the orbit of Rwanda and Uganda, which arm the rebellion. The United Nations embargo on Rwanda is ineffective.
Ronald Nablo also believes the DRC's days are numbered.
Secessionist movements will break it apart.
Thank you for that letter. Remember, the email address for your comments on our programmes is feedback.africa@dw.de. Our postal address, AfricaLink, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. A reminder of our main stories. On the eve of World AIDS Day, the Chief of Staff at UNAIDS has told this programme they would like to see more people getting tested for HIV, but a world without AIDS was achievable. From Goma in the eastern DRC, the International Committee of the Red Cross has been telling us that displaced people there lack basic necessities of life and there is a shortage of water in the city. We've also been hearing hearing how angry motorists in South Africa are threatening to disrupt the introduction of an electronic road tolling system. And there we come to the end of another week here on Africa Link. Do tune in next week when Isaac Mugabe will be here. Until the next time, this is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.